If tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife. I thank my lucky stars to be living here today, 'cause the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away. And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today, 'cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA. From the lakes of Minnesota to the hills of Tennessee, across the plains of Texas, from sea to shining sea, from Detroit down to Houston and New York to LA, well, there's pride in every American heart, and it's time we stand and say that I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today, 'cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA. And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today, 'cause there ain't no doubt I love this land.
Happy Memorial Day, everybody. On this day where we reflect on how far our nation's come and the people who have had the ultimate sacrifice and their families to help make this happen, help us have the freedom to sit here and drink a few cold ones and do a radio show on a Monday night to entertain everybody and give something for people to listen to. Thank you. Thank you, and thank you to your families. And if you haven't said thank you to a vet today, a vet's family, or someone else like that, then shame on you. And if you have, that's what America's all about. Thank you, everybody. Happy Memorial Day. Let's get this show started now. Welcome to Plum Love Food Live. Here we go.
I'm
There it is. Happy Monday night. Happy Memorial Day weekend, everybody. We got to do a little something to get in there for our veterans. So not to throw everybody for a loop or get you scared. You know, just like last year on Memorial Day, we did the same thing as well as July 4th. Happy Memorial Day, guys. Happy Memorial Day weekend. I hope it's been a great weekend for you. It's been insane for me. But I am here on a Monday night, just like I should be, doing what I love to do, and that's hang out and talk to you guys. My name is Chef Plum, and you should know that by now if you're checking this show out. That's the bottom line. We are getting close to 100 episodes. I can't wait. And you're checking out the number one digital audio food broadcast on a Monday night, Plum Love Foods Live. That's right. I'm sitting down here at the bar in the basement. I just cracked myself a top on a nice lemon lime seltzer, because I'm still watching my figure, and I'm happy to report. I think I'm down like 12 or 14 pounds or some shit. Either way, getting my bikini figure back. Not that anybody cares about that. But life is good, man. Life is good, and I think it's important that, you know, we say that when we go up and thank a veteran on Memorial Day, that we say to them, hey, thank you for your support. Thank you for your service. Life is good, and it's good because of some of the things you have done, and I think that's really, really important to me. That's one of the biggest, I don't know, I don't want to say not charities, but it's one of the biggest things we can support when it comes to just things in the world to support. Our veterans, our armed servicemen and women, are some of the most amazing people in the world, and the most, they just don't care. They care about everybody else. They don't care about themselves. It's amazing. So make sure you say thank you to them, especially on Memorial Day. You got time now. Don't go fire off on those generic thank a veteran gimmicks on Facebook or on Instagram. That shit's fucking lame. Find somebody and thank them. Shake their hand and say thank you. That's what's important. It's that human contact. We're getting past that these days with this all this social media bullshit. Take the time to shake somebody's hand and say thank you to them. It's really, really, really important. Ask them how their day was. Ask them about what they did. Ask them about what they're having for dinner. Just anything. Talk to them and say thank you to them. That's the key thing, man. People are social animals. Humans are social animals. We want to interact with people. All that aside now, again, happy Memorial Day. I have been working my ass off this Memorial Day. As you saw on Instagram, and I think it goes to Facebook as well, I cooked off and grilled a shit ton of lobsters yesterday. It looked awesome. Beautiful picture right by the garden. But more importantly, before that, dude, we shot two more episodes of Edible Nutmeg on the road this past week. We went to Litchfield Distillery, and we went to Mohawk Bison. That's right, y'all. I went to a bison farm. How fucked up is that? And especially here where I live in Connecticut, there's a bison farm. These animals are enormous. And the man that breeds them is quite a guy, man, quite a character. He is a man's man, no doubt. He has between 60 and 100 in his herd at one time, all the time. And these animals, 2,800 pound animals that can kick down a brick wall and have swords on their head, and they hate people. Yeah, that's how he described it to me. I'm like, oh, great. So I'm going to go hang out with these things then. Well, the good news is we didn't have to really get that close to them because you're not really allowed to, and they don't really want you to. But you can see them from afar, and they would come to the fence, and you can get kind of close to them, but not reach out and touch them. But I was kind of hoping to ride a buffalo, but I didn't. But you can see them, and it's really amazing to see. Just, I don't know, man, just you looking at it, and it really just kind of take you back. It did something to me. You're staring at these animals, and you just see this, you know, piece of American history, this piece of it's really humbling just to watch these animals walk around and know that that's what used to be everywhere. Out west especially, it's really amazing. And then the meat itself, listen, talk about how beautiful these animals are, but the bottom line here is too is that we're also, he's going to slaughter them to eat them, and that's what he does. He does it for meat. But God, they're so good, man. We did a beautiful dish. We grilled it with a bunch of grilled vegetables, did like a grill, like just basically like a mixed grill type plate with a great marinade. And I tell you what, man, really just off the charts. I was blown away by it. I couldn't believe how great that meat was. But that's what I want to talk about in this monologue a little bit before we get going with the interview tonight. Talk about barbecuing, a.k.a. grilling. I think it's something that people just kind of take for granted sometimes. It's one of those deals where they get the grill searing hot and they just throw their meat on top of it and you're good to go. But listen, there's a little more finesse to it when it comes down to it. But listen, so it's not always just let's get the shit as hot as possible, throw the stuff on there and cook it to our desired temperature. Not always the case. Sometimes slow and low is the way to go, especially when cooking buffalo like that, because buffalo doesn't have the fat content. Therefore, it's not as insulated as well. So what happens is it actually can cook a little bit faster It doesn't cook the same way a steak would or something like that. So you got to take your time on it. So what we did was an indirect heating method where we took a lot of the coals from our grill and we had them on one side. So we had a nice hot side and then we had a nice side that wasn't quite as hot. And so it's what happens is that it's cooking on a lower temperature essentially. You can control the temperature of your grill, not so much a gas grill I'm talking about, but a charcoal grill or a wood burning grill by doing it in that method, by making a pile and then getting it hot on one side and leave the other side not as hot. It's a great way to control the heat, especially on a grill like that when cooking something like bison. So make sure, you guys, when you're going to cook something, you don't always have to have the grill blaring hot. I know it sounds silly, but that's the case, man. It truly is the case. Now, if I'm cooking burgers or something, I might make it searing hot, but I'll still leave one little area that's not as hot because, listen, every grill has hot spots, and those hot spots can cook things faster than other spots on the grill. Anyway, enough with the barbecue minute, but it's Memorial Day weekend, so I have to talk barbecue. We also did a great dish where we grilled some chicken wings off. I'm going to save that one to show you when the video comes out because those grilled chicken wings were, I was pretty proud of those. The pictures look great. Yeah, if you were on Instagram, you saw them on there. They looked fantastic, and they tasted really good too. And listen, I cooked with gin. I've never cooked with gin, which is, I think it's interesting. I mean, who cooks with gin? That's what's up right there. Anyway, I got a good one tonight, you guys. We were talking to my buddy Dana Jackson, and Dana is the editor, proprietor, whatever you want to call it, of Edible Nutmeg Magazine from Edible Communities. Now, you probably have an edible in your community, in your town, in your state where you live, because they're all over. I think there's 79 or 72. I'm not sure Dana will correct me on that, but they're all over the place. You can have Edible Denver, Edible Colorado, Edible Richmond, Edible Charlottesville, Edible parts of New Jersey, Edible Vermont. It's called Edible Green Mountains. They're all over the place. And this magazine is something that Anthony Bourdain recently said the last great food publication out there. And it really is. I mean, what Dana does especially is pretty amazing, supporting the small farmers and smaller businesses using that magazine. And, you know, I'm interested to find out his story and how he got involved in doing that. So here's what we're going to do. I am going to play, you know what, we're not going to play any spots today. We're not going to play any commercials today. It's a commercial-free Memorial Day episode. How about that? That's what we're going to do, commercial-free Memorial Day episode. I'm going to play a few seconds of a song, get my stuff organized, and then we'll be right back with my man Dana Jackson from Edible Nutmeg Magazine. You're checking out the number one food audio program on Monday nights, Plum Love Foods Live. I'll be right back, guys. Hang tight.
I need a little space in my mind. I need that little hope I can't find. I need a little faith. Is that too much to ask for? I need to feel my soul come alive. I need to feel the strength to get by. I need a little faith. Is that too much to ask for? Too much to ask for. Too much to ask for. Too much to ask for. I need a little faith. need a little faith. Is that too much to ask for? I need a little faith. I need a little faith. I need a little faith. Is that too much to ask for? Too much to ask for. Too much to ask for. Too much to ask for.
Coming back here live with Plum Love Foods Live right here on a Monday night where it's nice and muggy and balmy out here in the Northeast. As I sit down here at the basement at the bar enjoying a nice cold spiked seltzer. That's right, guys. I've come to terms with it. I don't even mind bringing it up anymore. It's fine. I'm having a spiked seltzer. And guys, right now, I got to tell you, we got a very worldly gentleman coming on as my guest right now. And I even call him my friend. We've become friends over the past few months. You know, this gentleman himself, man, let me tell you about Dana really quick. This gentleman has been a ski instructor, a kayaking guide, an ocean kayaking guide at that too, which is insane to me. Like, I mean, there's definitely some sharks, a ranger for the Bureau of Land Management, an organic farmer, which I know the farm that he worked at as well. He's been all over the country. And to top it all off, he was an English teacher. And now he is putting out one of the most highly regarded magazines when it comes to food here in my state, part of the edible communities. I've got Dana Jackson on the line right now from Edible Nutmeg Magazine. Brother, what's going on?
Hey, Plum. How are you, man?
I am good, dude. I am good, man. I'm hanging out down here. It's a little bit hot because, I don't know, we don't have the AC on down here in the basement where I'm hanging out. But that's okay because I'm drinking a spiked seltzer and having a conversation with you.
Well, that was far too flattering an introduction. I don't know if I'm nearly as cool as you made me sound.
Well, listen, I had no idea you were an ocean kayaking. That's fucking crazy, dude. What, like, like a kayak? First of all, in the ocean, like I see those people when I'm out in a big fishing boat. I'm like, those guys should be eaten. Like, they deserve to be eaten. Like, it's just a tiny.
Yeah,
little
there
boat,
were a couple
man.
Times I got a little worried. No lies about that.
Okay, that's a story. Come on, I have to pause everything. Tell me a story about when you were worried on your ocean kayak.
Well, I never had any run-ins with sharks, and this was back when I lived on the West Coast. I actually grew up in California, Southern California, in the Los Angeles area, and yeah. I was living in San Diego at the time, and I was working sort of part-time as a kayaking instructor and a ocean kayaking guide for groups that wanted to do tours up and down the coast. And there was this one big buoy that floated outside one of the entrances to San Diego Harbor, and all of these sea lions would congregate on it. And right. A lot of times newer kayakers, when we paddled by it, would get worried because the male sea lions can be really vocal. They're somewhat territorial. And I told everybody, I was always to tell everybody, don't worry about it. There's no problems. They're not going to do anything. And one person was still really scared. And I said, no, check it out. Watch this. And I took my paddle and I slapped it on the surface of the water to make a loud sound to show how they would just swim away if they got scared.
Right.
And there was this particularly big male on the buoy at the time, and he did not get scared. In fact, no. He dove into the water and headed right for the group.
We were about
20 feet away from him. So I pulled my paddle out of the water really quickly, and I said, okay, let's keep paddling. Let's get out of here. And he came toward us and swam under us and left us alone. But needless to say, I learned a little lesson about facing off
wow.
the seals that day.
And you got back and you handed in your kayak instructing license right there. Like, yeah, you know what? That
right.
was not a – I'm pretty sure it says, number one, don't fuck with the wild animals. That's probably in the instruction booklet, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure how professional they thought I was that day.
That's crazy, man. But, you know, it's interesting because you look at, you know, it almost kind of came full circle here for you with Edible Nutmeg. You worked at a farm. You actually worked as with land management as a ranger, right? Which, by the way, sounds amazing when you say you're a ranger.
Yeah. Again, you may be flattering me a bit much, but yeah, I spent a couple seasons working in Montana for the Bureau of Land Management, and we worked on the Missouri River, and we would canoe up and down the river, maintaining campsites. And BLM is interesting. I won't go into too much detail here; it'll bore everybody. But they play the line between what the Park Service does, which is maintaining national parks and national monuments for visitors, and dealing with people, farmers and cattle raisers who own land adjacent to those areas. So a lot of times we'd have to do things like wrangle up cows or bulls that had left their property and stumbled onto public BLM land, and they weren't supposed to be there. But I learned a lot about the outdoors and a lot about conservation when I was a part of that.
Well, it's amazing because you and I have had conversations. You told me you were from L.A. I'm a giant fan of Los Angeles. I've been there many times, and I just love it. I haven't taken my family yet. I'm afraid if I do, they won't want to come back. It's definitely a different world, and I'm a beach guy. I love the ocean. I love everything about it, not just obviously for the beach, but, you know, I mean, I love to fish. I love saltwater fishing, all that sort of stuff. You're just the opposite. You want to be – you're not an ocean guy at all. You want to be kind of – inland and around the rivers and rolling hills and things like that. You dig that sort of stuff.
I love it. Yeah. And you know, I loved growing up in LA. It's a great place, and never forget how fantastic the food is also out there.
Yeah.
I mean, ethnic cuisine from all over the world and just so much in terms of great restaurants and good food to eat. But over the years, I guess the dryness of it all got to me a little bit. And I visited Connecticut all through my youth because my grandfather lived up here in Northwest Connecticut. So almost every summer and sometimes for Christmases, we'd come out here. And it's a completely different landscape. And the biggest difference to me is that there is so much water here. Everything is green and grows.
Yeah.
In Los Angeles, nothing is green and nothing grows. It's an exceptionally dry place.
A really dry place, and you always hear about droughts and stuff, but when you go there and see it firsthand, I mean, it really is exactly what you would think it would be. Like, it's brown, and not, you know, there's not a lot of stuff growing there. It's kind of weird to see, especially coming from here where we live. Now, recently, this week, I was talking in the intro about how for the series we're due, we went to Mohawk Bison Farm, and I hadn't quite been up to northwestern Connecticut as I was this past weekend. Man, it is beautiful up there.
Yeah, well, that actually was the first time I'd been to Mohawk Bison Farm myself, and that is even a cut above most places in Northwest Connecticut. That was a really beautiful farm to visit.
It was an amazing place, and I tell you what, he was great. The whole thing came off fantastic, but I was talking about bison in the intro a little bit, man, just almost how humbling it is to see this animal that has been, you know, in this country for so, so long. It's such a part of the heritage, such a part of what we all, just what was part of us all. And you see it kind of sitting there and just it's in its real environment with its herd and walking around. It's very humbling to check that out and see that in person, I thought.
Yeah, and maybe a little scary too. I mean,
yeah.
Bison aren't necessarily known for being docile.
No, but no, you know, the farmer told me, he said, Peter was his name. He said, It's a 2,000-pound animal that can kick down a brick wall, and it has two giant swords on its head and doesn't want to do anything you tell it to eat people. And I was like, oh, I'm glad we came. This sounds awesome.
Indeed. Well, that's why when we were down at the fence line and the bison were starting to mosey up to us to check us out, first thing I asked was, how do you tell if they're mad or not?
Yeah, but you asked that as you were running 150 yards the opposite direction. Hey, how do you tell you took off running? I didn't know you run that. Well, yeah, I guess that's a great place to start with the magazine, man. That's kind of how I met you, was with the series that you were so kind to embrace, to take a leap of faith on, the Edible on the Road series. It's done very well for us here with Edible Nutmeg Magazine. It's doing a lot of cool spots, man. What are your thoughts on it?
Well, I couldn't be happier with it. I'm so happy with the way it's panned out and the way viewers have embraced it and have been enjoying watching it. You know, I don't think any of us really knew what we were getting into when we started that, when you guys proposed it to me. And the one thing that I always wanted to make sure the series conveyed was that we were fulfilling the mission of Edible Nutmeg Magazine, which is to cover small farms or small food producers or small restaurateurs, people who otherwise might not get a lot of attention. And it's absolutely done that on every episode. And that's, to me, been really, really exciting to watch come together.
Yeah, I think it's the biggest thing for me, too. You know, we don't have any, you know, anyone who's not producing, who is sponsoring us as an outside sponsor. Nobody we go to sponsors any of this stuff. Nobody pays us to go there. We go there because we want to show these small things. I had no idea we had a bison farm in our state. I don't think you did either until this past Thursday.
No, and I actually feel really guilty about having not known that because I don't actually live that far from it. And I think that's actually a great example of there's so much going on in the small food industry in Connecticut, whether it's preparation of food or growing of food, anything like that, that even me, somebody who's so deeply entrenched in what's going on in local food, right here in my backyard, there's a place I didn't even know about where they had a herd of 80 bison in their backyard.
It's crazy.
So it's cool. It's really cool to get to participate in things like that.
It's great, man. And I think one of the things, you know, so one of the things I love the most about the magazine is I think I'm going to sound like I'm in fifth grade, but the pictures are just so great. And I think the pictures really convey the story itself. When you're reading a story about somebody, it's really conveyed very well because the pictures look fantastic. I know I sound ridiculous saying that, but if you see the magazine, you'd know exactly what I was talking about. And I mean, Dan, you probably understand what I'm saying, right? I don't sound that crazy, even though you're a former English teacher.
Well, yeah, you don't sound ridiculous at all. You're echoing the sentiment I hear all the time about the magazine. People love the photographs. And, I mean, that's what's really nice about a well-produced magazine is when it can have great photos that really help to enhance the story that's being told there and introduce you into some of the personality of the people that are behind the stories. So that's, you know, it's something that has been a part of Edible Nutmeg and really all the edible publications across the country. And it's something that I'm really happy to get to continue doing.
So how did you get involved with Edible to begin with? What brought you to do that? I mean, obviously you're an English teacher, so you know how to write, obviously, but like to say, okay, I'm going to take that and, you know, I'm going to take over this magazine. This is going to be my magazine.
Well, it's a funny story. I mean, if you had talked to me 3 years ago, I would have had no idea that this was even on the horizon for me. And what I was doing at the time was I was working full-time at Walden Field Farm in Washington,
yeah,
Connecticut. It's a 25-acre organic vegetable farm, and I'd been doing that for a while, and I really enjoyed it. And I'd been saving up money and prepping myself in my head to try and start my own farming operation. I actually was really interested in growing both kitchen and medicinal herbs, everything from like sage to basil to chamomile to anything. And it was, I don't know, I probably was 3 or 4 months short of pulling the trigger on that when I ended up meeting the founder of Edible Nutmeg, a fellow named Robert Lockhart, and he started Edible Nutmeg back in 2006.
Okay.
And I found out that he was interested in turning the title over, that he had was getting ready to be finished with it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of those things where I was going out to have coffee with him for the first time, and I said to myself, it's going to be fun. I'm going to get a cup of coffee, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to have a laugh with this guy, and that'll be the end of it.
Sure.
And, you know, then 3 months later, I was publishing the magazine. It's just,
wow.
I just really fell into it. Yeah.
So what made him want to get out of it was just, I mean, obviously it's a shit ton of work. I know that from talking to you, but I mean, this guy too, was it just the same thing? He was just too burnt out on it?
Oh, I mean, I don't know if he was burnt out on it. I think that, he'd been running it for getting close to 10 years.
Yeah.
And it is a huge amount of work. It really was much more work than I ever expected it would be. And I think that, that he was ready to go on and do other things. He happens to be a really phenomenal photographer. In fact, in most of the issues that he produced when he was publishing it, his photos show up throughout the magazine, and as you know, those are invariably excellent photographs. So
absolutely. I mean, you got to find a way to put yourself over with it too. I mean, like, you're a great writer, so hopefully you're writing some stuff, and he was a photographer, so his picture should be in it. I mean, you got to take what you got and do something with it for sure.
Oh, yeah, definitely. But, I mean, it's still been a huge learning experience. You know, having background as a writer can help you out when, you need to write an article. But the rest of the magazine is, you know, I try to explain it to people sometimes, and it's a bit like running a puppet show with, you know, five puppets on each finger and trying to make them all look like they're doing something good. it's really a sort of crazy balancing act.
Give us an idea of what it takes to put out a say you're going to put out an issue, the summer issue or the winter issue. Give us an idea of what that takes. What does that entail you having to do, like, on a day-to-day basis?
Well, I mean, the number one thing that's involved in it is being able to get good people on your team, because the magazine, if it were just me doing it alone, we wouldn't have a magazine. There's no way. And so a lot of what my job ends up being is getting people together to produce the articles, produce the photographs, and then really collating all of that into what ends up becoming a magazine. And so that's really the center of my day-to-day operations, is making sure we have all those pieces in place and that we have all the right people that we need.
Right. Now, so do you have a certain amount of pages you try to hit every issue, or can you kind of change that a little bit as you move forward, as it grows, or how does that work?
This is a good question. Now, as you mentioned earlier in the show, there are edible magazines all across the country, and you did get the number a little wrong, so I will correct you on it. At last count, gosh, even I'm going to get this wrong now because it changes so quickly. At last count, there were 89 across North America, because there's a few in Canada too. Although I think Edible Alaska just published their first issue like last week, so we may be at 90 now. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I heard actually the fellow who does the design and layout for Edible Nutmeg, he's the guy who puts all the stories and pictures on the pages in a way that's aesthetically pleasing. He actually also did the layout for the first issue of Edible Alaska, and he was telling me that they have to ramp their production up a lot in advance because the magazine is printed in California and then shipped by boat to Alaska to be distributed.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah. And then on top of that, they do some of their distribution by airplane once it gets there. So if I think my job's difficult, I am not envious of what's going on up in Alaska.
But the food there, I know we're not talking about Edible Alaska, but you kind of piqued my interest here. I mean, Edible Alaska, like, what are we talking about? Like seal blubber farming or something? Like, I mean, Jesus Christ. I mean, obviously there's lots of wildlife out there, but I don't think of it as much of like a farm place or, you know, amazing food happening.
Well, there's local food everywhere, and I think that if you went down into, say, the southern states, they might ask, what the heck are you writing about in Connecticut? You guys have like a 3-month growing season. And, you know, compared to what they have practically a year-round growing season in some places. And in Alaska, I think you have the same issue. You just have a summer that's warm, but short. And so you grow what you can, and they grow a lot more in terms of winter crops, hardy things like cabbage and kale. So, I mean, people everywhere want to eat good local food. It's not something exclusive to places where it's easy to grow good local food.
All right, so my new goal now is Edible on the Road, Alaska. I want you to come be a producer. We're going to fly out there. We're going to do it. It's going to be amazing.
I can't wait. Are we going to go to a Kodiak bear farm?
Whatever you want to do, we'll make it happen. You want to go hunt Kodiak bears? I'm down, dude. Trust me, I'm in. Let's do it. You know, so this magazine itself, we touched on it a little bit early in the conversation there. What I love the most about it is how much it focuses on, you know, not so much the bigger guys. So listen, one of the things I point out a lot is that in our state here locally, and this is a national show, but just locally in Connecticut, I mean, we have over 45 local breweries now. It's amazing how much local beer is becoming a thing and happening here. And you know, Two Roads Brewing Company, I'm really, really tight with those guys. I'm great friends with them. They got a little hot at me when we didn't bring On the Road to them to come shoot over there. But they don't need the help. They don't need they don't need us to come over there and do that. You know, part of the fun going to someplace like Black Hog that we did in episode one was, you know, they're not quite, they at the time, they weren't quite as known. It was fun to go to a smaller place like that.
Yeah, well, coincidental and unintentional plug, I'm actually drinking a Two Roads Little Heaven Session IPA right now. But yeah, you're right. That's a big deal. Two Roads, if you're a beer drinker and you're in Connecticut, you've probably heard of Two Roads. You've probably consumed Two Roads because they have really good coverage.
I mean,
they have great coverage.
They're going out of Maryland.
Right. I mean, almost any place I go that has craft beer on tap, you can find Two Roads, at least one
right.
one of their different varieties. And it's great beer. But you're right. They don't need the coverage as much as somebody like Black Hog would. And that's, you know, again, that's really the core of the mission of the magazine and, you know, by extension, Edible Nutmeg on the Road, is we want to make sure people who haven't gotten a lot of attention but are doing something really exemplary in the world of food production, we want to cast a light on them and let people know what's going on with them.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of the whole basis. That's why I think that you and I see eye to eye when it comes to this sort of stuff. Because, listen, a place like Two Roads, love them to death. They're some of my favorite people on the planet. I've won 2 big awards doing dinners with these guys. But everybody knows who Two Roads is. We don't need to go show people who they are. You know, Black Hog, you know, not as many people knew them. They're doing great. They actually just won. They won the Bacon and Beer Classic this year. I was at, and they're doing fantastic, and they're great guys. But I think that's the fun part about doing what we do, and I actually hope that I'm currently drinking. I'm on week 7 no beer, Dana. Week 7 starting today.
Oh, I know too well. Don't forget, I saw you last week, and I was wondering why you ordered a glass of wine instead of a beer.
Sorry,
I didn't mean to embarrass you.
Yeah, that hurt a little bit. That's okay. There's a company called Spiked Seltzer I met at Bacon and Beer. And they are it's a seltzer water, but it has, like, essences of, like, you know, lime or grapefruit or whatever shit they want to put in it. And it's all natural stuff. And it's actually brewed. Like, they brew it with corn, which is pretty freaking cool. And they do it out of Norwalk.
Oh. I'm familiar with the company.
Yeah, I think it'd be cool to kind of go check those guys out and see what they're doing. I just think that, you know, those are the kind of things I think are fun to show people.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. That's, you know, it's funny. People sometimes ask me what's your favorite part of publishing the magazine, and of course I always jokingly say, well, I like going to the restaurants when we do a story because we get free food when we have to photograph it.
Sure.
But that really isn't my favorite part. I mean, my favorite part by far is meeting the people who are behind these little small business stories. And our visit to Black Hog is a great example. I mean, how much fun were those guys to hang out with? It was clear that they love doing what they do. And while they're happy to make a living doing it, that's not why they're doing it. They're doing it because they're passionate about it.
Not at all. And that, I think that essentially, I mean, that statement alone sums up the magazine. Like, that's what it's about. It's about, you know, showing these people who have passion for what they're doing and understand that, you know, for a while it may be a labor of love, you know, it's going to be that way. They say that entrepreneurs are the only people who work 60 hours a week, so they don't have to work 40-hour weeks. And I think that's true.
Yeah. Well, I think both you and I could attest to that.
Yeah. I don't know what it's like not to work. So when you see yourself doing this magazine, and the magazine is fantastic, are you currently going quarterly? Is there any chance to maybe get 5 issues out a year coming up?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly that's the door's open if we want to do that. Some edibles publish 6 times a year. They'll do it every 2 months. And it's something that I've thought about. And returning to an earlier question that I failed to properly answer regarding, you know, what's the sort of page size I shoot for in a magazine. We love to do something that's in the 35 to 40 page range. But by no means is that a cap. Like, if you were to head up to Boston and pick up a copy of Edible Boston, it's one of the most successful edibles in North Atlantic region.
Wow.
They do 6 issues a year, and they do, you know, somewhere between 120 and 140 pages in each issue.
Wow.
So the sky is really the limit. It's dependent on advertising. Now, as your listeners may or may not know, the majority of edibles in the country are free to the readers. You know, you'll find them at grocery stores or coffee shops or places where we think people who like to read it might pick it up. And anybody can pick it up and take it home. And it's really a high-quality print publication. So we rely almost solely on advertisers to support the magazine, and that's how we keep it going. So as more advertisers are interested in getting, you know, their message out to our readership, the more of them that are on board, the bigger the magazine can get. So there's really no limit to what we could do with it.
And it's really cool, man, because it really does. Because even though it's advertiser supported, I feel like when I'm looking at it, I don't know. Like, I feel like it's not like ads being crammed down my throat on every page.
Yeah, well, we keep that in mind. I mean, that's a big part of the drive of designing the magazine is we feel that the edible name carries with it a lot of integrity. And yeah. We hope that when readers read the magazine, if they read about a restaurant or a small farm, they can feel that, you know, we, the magazine publishers, have on their behalf, on the reader's behalf, we've vetted that for you. We've told you, like, these guys are authentic. They're doing a good thing. They're not greenwashing. And they're worth your time and your money. And part of that is making sure that we differentiate between advertising and editorial. Sometimes in print media, that can be kind of a hard line to discern. Sometimes you're not sure whether a story is there because somebody paid for it or, you know, and so we really take great pains to make sure that that doesn't happen in Edible Nutmeg. We want readers to know that when you see an ad, you know it's an ad, and when you see a story, you know it's a story.
Man, and that, I mean, you put that so eloquently. You're absolutely right. We were talking about it after our shoot on Thursday, you and I and some of the people on our crew that were hanging out with us. They got brought up about doing product placement. And I think you and I kind of just shot that shit down immediately because I don't think we want anything to do with that.
Right. In fact, I remember the frown that crossed my face when somebody brought that up. I was like, no, that's not that's not how we operate. And I can understand. What's that?
You looked right at each other because that's not, I don't do that. I don't, you know, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to say this is great because you gave me $20 to say this is great. I don't play that game.
Right. I mean, I can see a certain point of view from somebody, which is that, yeah, but you're going to make more money if you do it this way. And I think in the short term, they're probably right. You know, we would if we took product placement money. But in the long run, we would end up really damaging our business, you know, both you with Edible Nutmeg on the Road and me with Edible Nutmeg Magazine, because viewers would lose their sense of our integrity. And once you've done that, you're going to lose your viewers, you're going to lose your readers, and they're, you know, even though advertisers is what they're what keep us financially afloat, none of that would exist without our readers and viewers. Who, I mean, that's what it's all about, is
completely
having those people. Yeah. So as far as I'm concerned, you know, I'd rather see the magazine fold before I would, you know, change it up to something where we were, you know, asking people to pay for an article about their farm or their brewery or something like that.
Well, you could always go back to being a saltwater kayak instructor, right?
I don't know if I could do that here. I might have to move back out west. But, yeah, I suppose I've got that.
There's seals in the Sound. You can go piss them off.
right.
So how much support do you get from, you know, edible communities, the I don't know how to ask the word, the corporate edible, like the people who run the whole brand? How much support do you get from them?
A good amount, but in fairness, you know, I mean, the edible, some people describe them as a franchise. And they are franchise-like in a sense that, you know, we all share the same sort of branding. You know, you'll see that edible font in italics on the cover. You'll see that on every edible across the country. But unlike other franchises, say, like, you know, for instance, someplace like McDonald's, where you go in and the menu is the same everywhere you go, edible publications are nothing like that because they're hyper-regional. So, you know, the stories I'm telling, even if you drive 2 hours south into New York City, the stories you're going to see in Edible Brooklyn are totally different, covering totally different things because we're in two completely different areas.
Right.
So publishers have a lot of independence within the edible family. Now, at the sort of national level with edible communities, there's all sorts of great stuff that they do for us, and none of us would be here if they weren't doing what they do. And that includes promotion of the brand, helping us retain a national spotlight, helping us be more relevant on a national level. I mean, they'll sometimes put together stories that are not necessarily of regional interest to a specific edible, but of national interest. And they'll offer it out to everybody and say, hey, this is a great story. Yeah. And sometimes, you know, you find yourself, it's really not uncommon to have maybe a writer bail on you like a week before you go to press. And, you know, trying to pull together a 3-page story in zero time is not an easy task. And it's nice to be able to turn to edible communities and say, hey, what have you got that I can run in these 3 pages?
Wow. And so they could throw you something.
What's that?
So edible communities could throw you something for that, then, if that were to happen.
Oh, for sure, yeah, yeah. And, I mean, you don't have to go and ask. It's up there. It's, you know, they maintain a sort of national server that we can draw upon.
Wow.
But it's a lot more than that, too. It serves as a sounding board for all the different publishers to communicate with each other via listservs and things like that. And when I came on, and this was back in early 2015, so just over a year ago, I'd never done anything like this. I didn't know what I was doing. It was really, it was like into the frying pan, and I'll tell you, the butter was hot when I got in there.
Butter.
Yeah, but I was able to go to edible communities and scour the listserv and talk to other publishers and learn so much about best practices you know, ways to go about doing things, resources to call upon. I mean, there's just I wouldn't have been able to do it without their help.
Well, you're doing an amazing job, and I'll tell you what it does. The magazine is fantastic. The website's great. You can actually check it out at edible nutmeg magazine.com. Make sure you click on the Edible Nutmeg on the Road tab there and check those stuff out. But there's also a digital copy you can check out online. You can also subscribe, which to me blew my mind. You could actually subscribe and have this magazine delivered to your house. $28 a year is all it costs to have it delivered. Now, when that happens, does corporate do that or do you do that?
No, that's run entirely by me, by us, Edible Nutmeg in-house. And that goes for all the publications across the country.
Wow.
And the subscription thing is actually, it's a funny thing. I can't tell you how often people ask me the question, why would I subscribe to a magazine I could pick up for free at the grocery store? And to me, the way I usually respond is by asking a question to them. I say, have you ever had a friend who has donated money to PBS during one of their drives? Or have you ever had a friend who's donated money to NPR during one of their drives? It's the same idea, which is that, you know, maybe you're a reader, you're invested in Edible Nutmeg, you feel like you're a part of Edible Nutmeg's community, which is something that, you know, we try very hard to make our readers feel like they're a part of what's going on within the magazine. And it's a way for them to support the magazine. You know, maybe they've been a loyal reader for years, and they'd like to have it delivered and like to be a part of what we're doing. So it's
wow, that's great.
That.
And $28, I mean, that's nothing. I mean, that's I'm telling you honestly, I didn't know that. And when we finish this conversation, I'm actually going to sign up and you know, and I want to subscribe, and I'm going to do that. And,
oh,
and
nice.
The way you just described that makes me want to do it even more, believe it or not.
Oh, well, thanks, man. Thanks. I mean, that's another thing we talk about a lot is community. You know, part of what we do obviously is highlight businesses, lesser known, small food production businesses. But this has been on my mind a lot lately. I've just really about 2 days ago finished the summer issue and sent it off to press, and it'll be out and available in a few weeks. But part of that, I was writing the letter from the publisher, and I was thinking about community and how vital food is to the way we live our lives. Interesting sidebar, which is that when I was a young man in my early 20s, I was really like super unhealthy. I think I lived primarily on a diet of natural light beer and cheeseburgers.
Wait, they had beer back then?
yeah, back in the 20s. I mean, I was in an awful state. My body was falling apart, and I was like 24 years old. Being me, and you know, being unwilling to do anything halfway, I ended up doing this really radical thing. And I was living in San Diego at the time, so maybe it can be better understood. But I jumped into doing a raw food diet.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what that is?
Absolutely, I've worked with clients with it.
Yeah, and it was really popular on the West Coast at the time, and I dove into it and ran with it for about 6 years. Did amazing things for my body, really like healed up a lot of the damage I'd done to myself by you know really bad diet. Didn't hold. I'm not on it anymore. But the reason I bring it up is because I learned a lot about food and community during that period, which is that all of a sudden I had stopped eating what all my friends and family ate. And what I discovered is that when you don't eat what your friends and family eat anymore, in a lot of ways, they sort of stop being your friends and family. You don't see them as much anymore.
Wow.
You don't do things with them as much anymore because food is so central to what we do every day. I mean, think about how many times you meet somebody for coffee, or you sit down to have dinner, or you pop in to have lunch with somebody. I mean, food is really integral to the way we interact with each other as human beings. And so I think about that a lot when we're putting together an issue of Edible Nutmeg, and think about how by highlighting these small businesses, we're actually helping to drive and support the small food community in general. And by doing that, we're not just helping these businesses be viable, but we're making the community better at the same time.
Man, you couldn't be more right. And I never thought about it in that way. And that's some serious food for thought for any young culinarians out there. And he's right about that. Like the people that you eat with are generally your friends. The ones you don't eat with, they probably won't be your friends as much. I mean, I'm obviously summarizing, but I think that's the truth, man. That really, really is. And you can check out the stuff for sure over at EdibleNutmegMagazine.com. There's tons of cool stuff over there, tons of articles. And I'm sure you can get in touch with Dana there also if you wanted to. However, I want to tell you, man, just based on what you just said there, I end every episode of this show by saying food is one of the most important things that we have in this world. Everything important in life happens around food. Let's make sure we give it the time it deserves. And I think that that's my mantra as a chef. I think it's one of the reasons you and I get along so well.
Yeah, I mean, I've enjoyed working with you since we started. And at first, I got to admit, you know, when the producer of the show showed me your headshot with that blue mohawk, I said, no way, this is not going to work. But thankfully, I took a dive, and the second I shook your hand, I'm like, oh, it's on. This guy's cool.
Dude, I have to. I'm old, so I have to. I do the hair, blue hair so the kids like me. That's why. That's all.
you're such a media whore, man.
That's right. That's me. So listen, you know, I guess one of the last things I wanted to ask you about, man, and this has been a fantastic conversation. I actually think it's going to go for 2 hours if you wanted to. We're not going to because I have to get up early. But I wanted to ask you was, so we live in a world now where food bloggers are a thing. I mean, here in Connecticut, we have two giant food blogs, Omnom CT, Dan and Christian, who I'm great friends with, and of course, CT Bites. These are two giant food blogs. You know, in a world where we have these things immediate, you know, where it's I can go online, I can check out their websites and things like that, Edible Nutmeg still kind of stands the test of time. Why is that? Why is that in this world where we can find this stuff immediately from these guys? Can a print magazine like that still stand up?
Well, that's a good question. And I think that there's different... I mean, I think there's different answers to it. I mean, obviously, I think that, I mean, I'm biased. I was an English teacher for years. I love books. I like holding a book. I was never a guy to go buy a Kindle. That's just not my thing. I don't want to read a book on my iPad or on a computer screen. I want to read it in my hands. I like turning the pages. And I think magazines like the Edible Publication.
Just time out just to back you up. I'm the same way. I want a magazine in my hand, and I'll hold the phone in my hand. I was never a Bluetooth headpiece guy. You know why? Because you walk around, you look like you're reading something on a fucking iPad. You look dumb, number one. And number two, if you have
like
Bluetooth, if you have a Bluetooth, you're the crazy guy walking around talking to yourself in the city, and you look like an asshole. That's all it is to it. You know, 15 years ago, those people, we'd walk on the other side of the road if we saw somebody walking on the street talking to themselves. Anyway, sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, that's all right. It's all right. It's a good point. And so I think that Edible Publications in some way help to fill that niche that people like to hold something in their hands. They like to have something tangible. But I mean, I love the food blogs we have in Connecticut. I think they do a great thing, and they do something that Edible Nutmeg really can't do very easily, which is they are great at letting people know about new things and immediate happenings, you know, like a new restaurant launching or something like that. Edible Nutmeg being on a quarterly print schedule right now, you know, we're always behind the ball when it comes to announcing a new restaurant or something like that. So we don't try. That's not what we do. We're not there to tell you about what's the most new, most happening thing. What we're there to do is to fill you in on something that you might have missed. You might have driven by one time and it's been there for years. And so I think that there's definitely a place for it. And I think the success of Edible Publications across the country speaks to that.
Yeah, I think absolutely. It's the branding. It's the name. People know Edible. They know the name. Any thoughts on the best? I guess let me rephrase the question. So I'm tight with some guys over at Connecticut Magazine, and I know the way they formulate their print publication is they publish things online. Whatever does well as far as hits and things like that online is what becomes their print magazine for that month. That formula, is that a tough formula to try to work out?
No, I mean, I think we probably could do something like that, but I don't think it's something that we really want to do. We print a lot of stories on our website, publish a lot of stories, I should say, on our website, but they're always unique. They're always different from what you're getting in print. And part of that is because, I mean, frankly, to be honest, I am overwhelmed with the deluge of stories going on in Connecticut. Now, Edible Nutmeg covers Western Connecticut alone. We're talking the counties of Litchfield, New Haven, and Fairfield, which geographically is not that big of an area. And I'm looking at, you know, if I sat down and took the time to plan it all out, I could probably have issues full of stories for the next decade. Just
right.
on what I've seen, you know, in the last 2 months of being here in Connecticut. So there's so many good stories to tell, and I could spend a lot of time seeing if we're going to, you know, get more people interested in a story because I got a lot of hits on the web, or I can go out there and do what the mission, you know, to fulfill the mission of the magazine, which is to highlight as many of these stories as possible. You know, we're only able to do so much in print because print costs a lot of money to put together.
Sure.
The web's not like that. And so we can take advantage of that and talk about a lot more places than we would have been able to if we were relegated solely to print.
And if you want to check out those stuff online, you definitely can. It's really simple. Just go over to EdibleNutmegMagazine.com. There's some great articles there, especially if you're in the tri-state area, some great stuff. Not to mention Edible Nutmeg on the Road. There's a little sub-menu there. You can click and go to that. You can also subscribe for $28 a year and support a great local magazine right there.
When's the next episode of Edible Nutmeg on the Road coming?
Edible Nutmeg on the Road, the next episode is happening.
It's a couple weeks.
We are doing,
you think
June,
we would know this, right?
Well, June 15th. How's that?
I love it. Good.
Currently, Shay just went, what? Holy shit. It's funny, man, because those things have come out great, and we've gotten a lot of attention for it outside of just in that community, and I look forward to growing that whole series as a whole with you and doing something really, really cool with it down the road. So I want to ask you, man, you're a guy who has, I mean, you've been all over the place. You've been East Coast to West Coast. You've worked in all sorts of places. Obviously, you're a food guy, so I'm going to give you my my quick fire three questions, if you don't mind.
All right, go for it.
All right, so what was the dish, what was the entree, the food, what was something that you had in your life, maybe as a child or maybe, growing out on the West Coast or maybe in your travels, that when you ate it, it was a little bit life-changing? You said, you know what, food is a real thing. Food is not something we just have to eat to sustain ourselves. This is an amazing thing I'm having an experience with. What was that dish? Do you remember it?
I mean, I can tell you a dish I grew up with that to me was really core to my regular eating habits that my mom used to make, that when I grew up, I later found that everybody thought is like the weirdest thing in the world to eat. Nobody's ever eaten it.
All right.
She used to make me blue cheese sandwiches, literally like two slices of bread, blue cheese, and then mayonnaise.
You can't even call it like a, like a poor guy, like a poor man's sandwich or something, because blue cheese isn't cheap.
Right. No, but they were delicious, man. I can't tell you how shocked I was when I found out as a young man that other people didn't grow up eating those things. But I do have a incredible affinity for really good spicy salsas. Like, I'm not talking those like chunky salsas with like big chunks of tomato and stuff. I'm talking about a salsa that's been basically turned into a puree, and it's a thick puree, and it's usually like dark red, like kind of foreboding and scary because you know how hot it's going to be. And growing up in Los Angeles and being exposed to such a variety of different Central American, Mexican food, it's of all the things I lament in Connecticut, the lack of really good Mexican street tacos kills me. I'm so sad to not have those.
Well, so wait, are you a hot sauce guy? This is news to me. Are you into hot sauce?
Oh, absolutely. Man, I'm drinking right now out of a pint glass, Dragon's Blood Elixir hot sauce pint glass. I've got to introduce you to these guys. They're over in Eastern Connecticut. They make killer local hot sauces.
All right. Well, this is completely like shit that nobody cares about, but I'm going to change your life. I'm going to do something really cool for you. So I'm a judge for the New York Hot Sauce Expo. I have been for the past 2 years, and go ahead and count yourself next year being a judge for that, because I'll make that happen for you, and you got to come hang out and talk about a great night. Holy shit. Check out the past episodes on this very program where we broadcast. We do a bunch of interviews and record live from the New York Hot Sauce Expo. Talk about a great time. Love to have you there. I think they would love to have you. It'd be a lot of fun.
I'm already excited.
Oh, it's ridiculous. It's just beer and men spraying whipped cream in your mouth. It's out of control.
Whipped cream? You mean to cool your mouth down?
You got it. Takes the capsaicin off your tongue.
It's all a little too sensual for me.
Oh, well, listen, let me tell you what. I have Adam Pock from Big Brother fame taking a can of whipped cream and spraying it in my mouth because I couldn't feel my face anymore. Yeah.
I can't wait. I can't wait to see that.
It's a lot of fun, dude. Count yourself in for that next year, that's for sure. I wish I had known this year. If you had told me, I'd have had you there. It just happened. Anyway, all that aside, the next question for you, they're supposed to be quick-fire questions, and we're not going very quick.
Yeah, that's not really my style. I apologize.
No, it's mine. I'm digressing into Hot Sauce Expo with you. Yeah, maybe we'll get you at the Best Wings Festival with Matt, the guy you just met this past Thursday. Talk about another great event. That's a fun one.
Yeah, I'm into that, too. Yeah, it was a lot of fun meeting him.
All right, so cocktails. You and I both enjoy a nice libation, adult libation. What was the first cocktail you had that you're like, man, I'm not just drinking old gold because it's $2 for a 40 ounce. I'm actually enjoying this beverage because it's nice, it's relaxing, and I'm getting down with it and enjoying the craftsmanship behind it, whether it's a beer or whether it's a cocktail.
Well, on the side of like a straight liquor, like a sipping liquor, I was sort of a semi bourbon, like Tennessee whiskey kind of fan for a while until I discovered single malt scotches from like Islay Malts, you know, from a little island off Scotland, and they're these super peaty, like rich, like if my girlfriend's in the room and I'm drinking one, she has to leave the room because it like makes the whole room smell like a peat bog. Those things. I can sit down and enjoy one of those and enjoy every second of it. But if I was going to drink a cocktail, I've got a special place in my heart for a good Manhattan. I think that's the old bourbon drinker in me who still likes those.
Nice, nice. Are you having a beer tonight? Are you a beer guy too, or a wine guy also?
I love beer. I love beer, and I think that, you know, when I was a younger man, pretty much the beer that was available was like domestic across the board, right? All like macro beers. And what's happened over the last 10 years or so with microbreweries has returned me to being a beer fan because it's so good now. There's so much out there and it's so good. I'm sorry you can't drink it. I really do feel bad for you.
Oh, God. Like, it's making me feel bad right now. Like, I think my feet are twitching. It's such a good thing. But the problem is that each one of these microbrewers that, you know, someone like you or I might drink. Because, listen, you and I, we're not drinking a Miller Lite. That's not going to happen. You know, we're going to drink, like, not that there's anything wrong with that. Like, you put me on a fishing boat, maybe I'm down. But, like, if I'm sitting here having a conversation with you, I'm going to drink a beer that's probably 450 calories of beer. But I'll drink seven of them. That's the problem.
Well, you've got to learn. Got to learn how to slow your pace down. That's all.
I'm a big dude.
I had a friend who used to say, he actually was a guy I worked with on a farm, and he used to say that. I mean, he drank so fast. He drank for every pint I drank, he'd finish three, and so he'd be, you know, really to the wall before I was even starting my evening out. But then he'd go home at 10. He'd just walk right out the door. I'd say, where are you going, man? He's like, I've had too much to drink. It's time to go to bed. I got to work tomorrow. And he was always bright and chipper in the morning.
See, he's got it figured out. He's got it figured out. That's what's up.
You've got to have a system.
There you go. So the last question, and this has been a great conversation. Again, we're talking to Dana Jackson, the editor of Edible Nutmeg Magazine, which you can check out at ediblenutmegmagazine.com. A great publication, an even better guy. we have a lot of young people who check this show out, a lot of young culinarians. I tell the story all the time about how I got an Instagram message from a girl in, I think it was North Korea. She sent me a message. It was her cleaning fish with a picture of her phone with my show on. So she's cleaning fish, listening to the show. It was pretty awesome, man, to see that shit. And it's very humbling when you see that. And so you know that you're talking to young people. So when you talk to young people, and I don't want to talk to Mr. Jackson, the English teacher. I want to talk to Dana, the publisher of Edel & Rutledge magazine. What is, a great piece of advice you give them? What would be a big piece of advice you would help young culinarians and entrepreneurs kind of coming up in the world right now?
That's a good question. Again, you're full of good questions tonight. I would tell you, there's the classic advice that people like to always echo, and they're going to say, follow your dreams, you'll find a way to make it work. And I think that can sometimes be true, but it also often cannot be true. There's plenty of people or plenty of things you can pursue that you love doing that maybe aren't going to, be good for you financially over the course of your life. I think the better advice is to not close any doors. Make a habit of when people offer to, to add something to your day or to say, do you want to take part in this? Whenever you can, say yes. Because like I said, there's one day I got an email with a picture of a blue mohawk wearing guy, and my instinct was to say, no, I don't want to talk to this guy. But I didn't. I said yes, and it turned out to be really good. You can always say no later if it does turn out to not be good. So,
right.
So make a habit of saying yes.
It turned out so good that we're doing it again, aren't we?
Indeed. I'm looking forward to that too.
Dude, it's going to be awesome. Dana, man, I can't thank you enough for your time tonight. I think that that is an amazing piece of advice to give people. I guess it's just take a chance. It's just don't be afraid to jump off into the deep end, right?
Indeed. Yeah. There's always something good to see if you just keep walking through open doors.
There it is, guys. Oh. That's my man.
Thank you, man. I really enjoyed being here tonight.
Dude, you're awesome. I could literally talk to you for another hour. Maybe next time we should do this again. We should do it live. What do you think?
I would love to do that, but I refuse to come on with you unless you're going to be back on the beer train.
Listen, here's what we're going to do. And we're live right now. Sorry, guys. I'm not trying to make you think it's a pre-recorded. We're live right now. I meant live, sitting next to each other. Dana, here's what I'm going to do for you. We're going to do this at a bar together, or maybe at a brewery together, but I'm going to wear a bikini and make you look at me.
Okay, I take it back. You can continue to drink the spiked seltzer. I will drink the beer.
There you have it. You can check out EdibleNutmegMagazine.com, a great publication put out by an even better person. Dana, man, I thank you very much for your time this evening, brother, and I look forward to talking to you down the road.
Hey, thanks a lot, man. I appreciate it. You have a good night.
You too, brother. I'll holler at you soon. Take care. There you go, guys. That's my man, Dana. A very, very, very talented man when it comes to putting out magazines and writing, but on top of that, an even better person. I'm going to get my ducks in a row here for a second. We'll come right back and wrap this show up. Hang tight. You're checking out the number one food live audio talk show on a Monday night, Plum Love Food Live. Stay right there, guys. I'll be right back.
The honey kicking goes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. You know what it is. Black and yellow, black and yellow, black and yellow, black and yellow.
Everything I do, I do it big.
Yeah,
screaming that's nothing.
When I pulled off the
than Cleco. And rocking yellow diamonds. So many rocks up in my watch, I can't tell what the time is. Got a pocket full of big faces. Throw it up, cause every nigga that I'm with, Taylor. Yeah. Crowd underneath them clouds, can't get close to you, and my car look unapproachable, super clean, but it's super mean, she wanna fuck with them cats, smoke weed, count stacks, get fly, take trips, and that's that, real rap, I let her get high, she want and she feel that, convertible drop feel, 87 the top pill, Jack,
you know what it is.
If you don't, you should by but now.
That's right, guys. Coming back here live right now to Plum Love Foods Live. That's right. We are kicking it right now at the bar. It is 11:12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I got to work in the morning. I'm sure you guys got to work in the morning. So we're going to put a bow on this and wrap it up and call tonight. Check it out, you guys. I want a big shout out and thanks to my man Dana Jackson from Edible Nutmeg Magazine. Great guy, great publication. A lot of fun talking to him. Make sure you check out EdibleNutmegMagazine.com. They have lots of stuff there. All the articles you find in the print magazine, you can find there, plus more. And, of course, a big shout-out about our dinner underground happening at Cops Island in Norwalk, my pop-up dinner, I guess I should say. It is sold out, but the wait list is open. It's amazing. Thank you to everybody. The dinner is being sold out on June 25th. We are more than a month away at this point. Is that right? More than a month? Nah, I guess it's about a month away now. Anyway, the dinner's already sold out. Very, very excited to have that, and I can't wait to come out there and just, you know, how do you say it? Show these motherfuckers, remind them just who I am. Trash Talker Skywalker. I got a knife saber for a couple of haters, baby. Bring the pain, because listen, you want to be the man, you got to beat the man. Let me tell you something, when it comes to being in this county where I live, I am the man. That's my shit right there. I'm trying to make a cut of wrestling promo. I don't mean any of that, but sometimes it's fun to say. Ladies and gentlemen, that's all we got. In the meantime and in between time, make sure you follow me on them Twitters and on them Instagrams at Chef_Plum. That's at Chef_Plum on Twitter and Instagram. Make sure you check out ChefPlum.com. And Monday night next week, we have the one and only Industry coming on the show. That's right, Industry. That's all I'm going to say. That's going to be on the show next week. And those of you who are on them social medias, you know what's up. Ladies and gentlemen, please remember, food is one of the most important things that we have in life. Everything, everything that is important in life happens around food. Let's make sure we give it the time that it deserves. And I'll see you next Monday, baby. Woo! Happy Memorial Day. Thanks, veterans.
To pay. There's a price to pay. Time for you to get down on your knees.